Hey, you guys, it's Brock here. I wanted to just introduce this episode of the podcast. Very excited about this one. Just had the pleasure of interviewing ABC News anchor for our Santa Barbara news station, Elise Martinez. Amazing reporter. She's interviewed as a reporter everybody from Oprah to movie stars and politicians and everyone in between. And we're going to kind of get into that on the podcast and kind of went an interesting direction. We talked a lot about self-care. We talked a lot about how to worry less and some practical advice, tactics, and things that we all can do to kind of stop the disaster movies from playing in our heads. So I think you guys are going to find this episode very, very interesting. She's an amazing woman, did an awesome job, and enjoy. All right, everyone, welcome to the Brock Cannon Podcast. I'm your host, Brock Cannon. This is a very creatively named podcast, and I'm super, super pumped today to be with Elise Martinez. Elise Martinez is an amazing woman, local news anchor, reporter, badass in general, and this is just fun. So
it is fun.
Elise did a story on athletes that are microdosing with cannabis. We talked about CBD. And we did that story. So now it's fun to turn the tables and get to know you and talk to you. It's funny because I often think that podcast hosts and people that are generally interviewing other people, they don't get interviewed that much.
I don't recall being interviewed in a long time.
When was the last interview you even did?
I'm trying to think. I think, during the Whittier fire, I had some video that went viral. I was driving through the fire with a fire captain because we were trying to cover the story. We were the first news media on site.
Okay.
But it was one way in, one way out on the 154, so we had to drive out. And so I was recording as we were driving through these flames and smoke.
Wow.
And so that went viral, and somebody turned it into a news story. I think The Guardian in the UK, and then a paper in San Diego. So I think they interviewed me, just asking me questions about that. But I've never had really anyone interview me in depth about anything.
Okay, this is so fun then. This is totally a first.
It's
so we're
going
to get into all the dark details of your life. No, but in seriousness, for our listeners and viewers who are not familiar with seeing you on the news, tell us just a little bit about your background. Like, where did you grow up and just a little bit of your back history?
I grew up in Long Beach, California, and I came to UC Santa Barbara and graduated with a degree in Spanish.
Oh,
and
nice.
So I don't have any journalism education. And then I was a school teacher for about 4 years. So I taught third grade bilingual education and then adult ed. And then I just decided, you know, I've always wanted to be a journalist. If you ask a lot of my elementary school friends, at least they would tell you that I would always say I want to be a reporter.
Yeah.
And so I started basically from the bottom at the assignment desk. And then I worked my way up to producer. And then I was a writer in LA for about 4 years, an editor. And then I came back to Santa Barbara, and CJ Ward, who is the evening news anchor currently, he gave me my first shot. I said, CJ, I really want to be on air. And by this point, I'd been in the business like 6 years. CJ, I really want to be on air. He gave me a shot. So I really owe my career to him, because before CJ, at least three different news directors told me, you'll never make it. You're not good enough. We just don't see you doing anything beyond, you know, being at the assignment desk.
Why would they say that? Did they have any, like, specific feedback about why?
Or no, they would say to me, I can't picture you as a reporter. Hmm. I can't picture you as a producer. I can't picture you doing anything else beyond what you are doing. One said, you just don't have it, whatever it is. You just don't have it. So it wasn't anything to me that was specific. It was more, to me, they had just decided that they were not going to support me. And so I found one person, and that was CJ Ward, and he was the one who supported me. And that's sometimes all you really need is just, you know, one person.
Yeah.
You know, besides yourself.
Yeah.
You need one person to believe in you.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah. So then from there, I just, you know, I was pretty green at first. And if you listen to my old stories compared to now, even my voice sounds different.
Really?
You know, just the confidence level.
Okay.
So the person, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the voice just sounds less confident. And now it's like I'm more confident, and it's a lot of practice. It's a lot of work. And even the best journalists, you know, you still have to hone your craft.
So I think that's a huge point for everyone listening is building confidence. Looking back on how that confidence was kind of built, what would you attribute that confidence building to?
To making yourself, you have to be vulnerable and you have to put yourself out there. You have to be scared. I go live almost every day, and mm-hmm. And when they say cue and you're talking, you are vulnerable, and I used to get really nervous. And there's been times where I fumbled my words. I didn't make sense. But you just keep building upon that vulnerability, and you just sort of gain this confidence. So you have to keep plugging away, keep trying, keep doing it, keep trying to get better every day.
That's so good. I mean, I think oftentimes we are our biggest critic,
yes.
Like 100%,
mm-hmm.
But we are in a very nasty world in a way, in terms of someone just jumping on social, hiding behind their computer like a little troll and posting some dumb comment that can derail some people. I know you've had comments, I'm sure.
Yes.
How do you kind of overcome those and work through those? And, you know, and maybe how did it affect you then versus how does it affect you now?
Those comments still sting because, you know, you do make mistakes. And I've had people send me emails saying, you know, you're a fucking idiot. I can't believe you did this, and you're biased. And, you know, I've had a lot of, and it still stings. It really does. But I'm able to process it more now and temper it with, you know, people who are not in a reporter's situation, the viewer, they have such a different perspective than what's actually really happening behind the scenes in the story. They have such a different perspective. And now I just sort of process it immediately and then let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't really, you have to listen to some criticism to get better, but you can't let it stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just sort of, I just process it and then I let it go. But then that's countered with these amazing, I just got an amazing email from somebody who just said that I was an asset to this community and that I was of value. And so it's always sort of, the universe sort of always balances everything out. And that one email balanced out maybe 10 others that
Absolutely.
I had received.
Yeah.
So, you're always going to have critics. It doesn't matter, you know, and that's the thing. You could be really respected as a reporter, which I work on that. That is the most important thing to me, is to be respected in this community, that when I walk up to do a story, that people know, okay, that's Elise. She's going to be fair. She's going to be balanced. She's going to be truthful. And I've worked on that, and I think I've earned that in a sense. So that's the most important thing.
That's awesome.
Is in being that, not just saying you're going to be that, but being that, and being that every day with every story, no matter if it's a story you like, if it's a story you don't like. You always have to find that one little grain of what might be important to that one person watching. So I think that's,
and how do you determine that, like that one little piece? I mean, it may vary with every story differently, but I like that you asked that question. I think everyone watching can kind of get something out of that, in the sense that, hey, what is in it for other people? Like, and if we approach everything like that, what value are they looking for? So how do you kind of go about that?
That's part of the craft as well. as a journalist, you pitch stories, but you don't always get to cover the story that you want. And sometimes you have to go cover a city council meeting about plastic straws or just a wide variety of things that may not affect me personally, but I have to consider, well, what is the most important element of this story that will impact people? And what does that one person watching really want to know? Why is that important to them? And it's often you just stumble upon it. When I go into doing a story, I don't write the story before I get there. I don't craft. I used to do that.
Uh-huh.
When I first started, I would sort of write the story in my head of how I thought it would be and what I thought I should say and present it that way. That's not how I go about it anymore. I walk in and I say, what's happening? And then it evolves naturally from that. What's happening right now? I don't predetermine anything when I go. And that's sort of how that one piece starts coming up. It might be an interview with somebody, something that they say leads me to another angle of the story, something that happened at the location where I'm shooting that leads me to ask another question. So it's this constantly evolving thing. And once you sit down to write the story, then you sort of gather everything that has happened and everybody that you've talked to, but nothing's predetermined. And then that, I just find that that angle, that element just sort of appears. So but I think it's really important not to predetermine anything unless it's a wildfire or a natural disaster. You kind of know what you're going into and you know the information that you have to give people. Evacuations,
right.
What's damaged, what's next, so that sort of is already, you know, there, but there's still elements of, okay, well, this guy saved this woman from being swept away, or so those things appear as well. But that's what I find, is just being open, listening to people and observing what's happening around you.
That's really
and
good.
Then that angle will appear, and you know, when you've done it well, someone will respond, or people will respond. If you post it on social media, people will say something, or someone will email you, or someone will stop you on the street and say, I saw that story, that was really great.
That's awesome. So I think that's a great segue into kind of the art of learning how to ask questions, and I'm probably the worst example here.
No,
still
you're doing
learning.
Great. No, you're awesome.
But it is...
You're better at it than I am.
I am so not. It's a skill, though, that I think is so important, and people that talk all the time are typically not learning as much. It's in the listening where you're going to learn a lot, which is why I love doing this podcast, because I get so much perspective from different people.
Mm-hmm.
But developing your question-asking skills has certainly had to be something that you've developed. Is there any specific practices or techniques that you've learned or studied over the years, or just in being out on the battlefield, that have helped?
I've never studied how to interview somebody. I think it's an organic thing for each interviewer. If I'm interviewing someone who I have to study up on, I usually just read about the person and have an idea in my mind of what I want to talk to them about. Or someone that you might have to take to task, someone who's in trouble. You need to know kind of in your mind what they're going to say so you can respond with a fact that they need to answer to. But I mostly find that when you're talking to people, it's really, I bounce my next question off of what they just said.
Okay.
And because sometimes if you have a list of questions, you sort of forget, and then you're trying to remember them, and you're trying to listen to what they're saying, and I just find that doesn't work for me.
Right.
So it's really, and I really want to have even if it's a contentious interview, I really still want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
I still want to talk to the person. And I feel that people, it's so true, every time I go to an interview, and while my photographer is setting up the camera, usually I don't have a photographer, I'm setting up the camera, we're just talking, and those are the greatest sound bites. And I always think, God, why isn't the camera rolling right now? Because then they don't ever repeat the wonderful things that they said when the camera was off. They never repeat it. It's never the same. You never get it. It's just gone. So sometimes I try not to talk to them before, but they want to, they often want to loosen up. What are you going to ask me? What are you going to say? Yeah. What should I say? And I'm just like, I always say, we're just going to talk. Let's just have a conversation. So that's mostly what I do, is I just try to talk and I try to have knowledge, the knowledge that I need to know going into it. And then I just try to have a conversation. It's not this real cut and dry way that I do things. I'm more organic. But if I was going to sit down with Donald Trump or, you know...
Would you like to sit down with Donald Trump?
Yes and no. I just feel like...
I would love to watch you sit down with Donald Trump, just for the record. I think that would be amazing.
I think it would be funny. Because I would just want to... You know, I would just want to have a conversation with him. And I would want to be that one person that could try to get him to really just give some honest answers.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be honest. Let's be real. That's my thing. I don't want to BS. I want to tell the truth, and I just want people to tell it. Let's just have an honest conversation. I just don't know if that's capable, if he's capable of that.
I don't think Donald Trump lovers. I don't think we have too many that watch this podcast. We love you if you do, though. It's all good.
Yes, it's all good.
We're just discussing.
Right.
So I really want to get into some of the specific people that you've interviewed, because I find it fascinating, and I've followed your social media now for, I guess, just over a year or so. Who has been the most memorable person, period, that you have interviewed?
By far, Katy Perry. I don't think people appreciate her enough as a human being.
Hmm.
I feel like she is just an amazing spirit, and she's one of those people, there's a reason she's who she is. Because when you're in a conversation with her, she is locked into you, and she makes you feel like you're the only person who exists on this planet. And there's only been a couple other people. Oprah, I interviewed her, and Kevin Costner, and they had that that vibe where it was just like, you are it, and they made you feel so important. And I think that's important to do when I'm interviewing somebody, no matter who it is, to make them feel that that is their moment and they are important no matter who they are. But Katy Perry by far was the most inspiring, and I'm still so appreciative of. I've been around her, I think, about 3 times now.
What were the circumstances in
well, she, her parents live here. She grew up in Goleta.
Oh, no way.
I think her parents still live in Montecito. She may have a property in this area, okay. But they were affected by the Thomas fires and the mudslides. And when the Thomas fires happened, we did wall-to-wall coverage. So I was on the air sometimes for like 12 hours straight.
Wow.
And I guess she was, excuse me, my matcha, she was watching from tour. I don't know where she was on tour, but she, on our KEYT mobile app, she was able to watch because we were streaming live. And people were, at that time, it was one of the biggest wildfires that we had seen.
Right.
And people were watching from all over the world. You know, we were getting, you know, lots and lots of viewers. And I guess she was watching me. And I guess I stood out to her in a way. Somehow I connected with her, what I was saying, what I was doing on air. So at the 805 Kick Ash Bash, she was performing. And they told us no interviews, nobody can talk to her. Like, she's just going to perform and go off the stage. And I said, Katie, it's Elise from KEYT. And she kind of... And she looked at me, and I was like trying to ask her a question, and I just had my cell phone because my photographer was over there doing something and I couldn't get his attention, so I just had my cell phone. And she looked at me, she's like, are you
the Elise?
You, no, not like that, but she was like, did you cover the Thomas fire? I said, yes, I was on TV. And then she said, I watched you every day.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
I literally was just died. And it was, and then she said a few more things, and I have it recorded, and then she sort of walked away. And I didn't really get to ask her a question because she sort of was talking to me. And then Then the next time she performed at the Santa Barbara Bowl, a benefit concert, and we had prearranged an interview. And so I was supposed to interview her before the show, and she was running behind, so they just said, can you stay for the show? I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. And so during the show, she came out on stage, and so I was in this side area waiting, and she said something like, she was talking about the Thomas Fire, and she said, what was the name of that woman? This is in front of the whole Santa Barbara Bowl. What was the name of that woman who, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly what she said. And people shouted from the audience, the Santa Barbara Bucket Brigade, they were all sitting together, and like some people, they were like, Elise Martinez. She's like, Elise? Yes, I watched that woman cover this fire. And she said this in front of the entire Santa Barbara Bowl. I have it on, somebody actually was recording it, which was crazy. So I was just blown away that she, it was for the first time, it was sort of like some validation that I really had never had before.
Absolutely.
And then I got to interview her afterwards backstage, and she just was gracious and kind and loving and just a really, it was just something I'll never forget. She was just amazing. That was awesome. That's my favorite by far.
Okay, so then I have to ask, on the opposite end of the spectrum, who was the most difficult or pretentious or awkward, maybe, person that you've also interviewed?
You know what? It's so weird. Like, I can so easily think of all the great interviews, and I can't really think of anybody who was... it's usually, honestly, city officials are the worst.
Really?
Yeah. It's just because it feels like they have an agenda.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's never, it's not dishonest. I don't want to say it's never not honest, but it's just always kind of forced. And I feel like they can never really express how they really feel. So that's the most awkward thing. I'm trying to think if anything else. I really haven't.
Anybody that was just like, period, a total asshole. Celebrity or non?
Oh my god. I'm sure there is. I just can't think of it right now. Total asshole. No, I can't. I can't think
That's
of
good.
Anything.
Uh-uh. That's good.
No.
All right. Awesome. No. If it comes to mind, we can.
If it comes to mind, I'm gonna say it right away.
I love it. So I've been dying to get into. I'm getting like serious, son. This is awesome. I've been dying to know about kind of your thoughts on a lot of what our president has been saying about fake news and really, in a way, I think, smearing the news and kind of making them the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have some thoughts on this.
I do. And it started before him, in a sense that there's a guy that was running around saying, fucker in the pussy. You know, have you heard of that guy?
No.
So it's a guy that runs around and he said it on air one time and it just spread like wildfire. And this was years ago.
Okay.
And I'll be standing on the street and men will walk by and scream that while we're going on air. It just recently happened to another one of my coworkers.
So wait,
it's just something that he thought was funny. So, and it just caught on like wildfire.
And was it an expression? I guess it was just aimed at the news, or just he was just trying to be funny, and it was.
I don't know the real origins of it. I just know there was a guy that was being interviewed, and he said it on live TV years ago.
Okay.
And now that's what guys say to female reporters.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, and it still happens, and I always wonder, when is that trend going to be over? When is that just not going to be funny to them anymore?
I had never even heard of that.
I'm sure your viewers.
I typically am not driving by yelling at female reporters as a hobby, but
well, we get it a lot. So we get it a lot. We get yelled at, and then it seemed like Donald Trump sort of brought the fake news. Even though we've always had fake news,
yeah,
we've had it. National Enquirer, all those crazy tabloid magazines, but it was just something that was sort of an aside, and people knew it was fake news, and they knew when they bought it that it was entertainment and it was that sort of tabloid entertainment.
Right.
But now, because of the internet, because of all these different websites, that line has sort of been blurred. Mm-hmm. And people, what's scary is that people cannot, a lot of people can no longer distinguish between fake news and real news. And I don't know that there is such a thing as real news because it's always evolving.
Right.
But at the time, it's an attempt to be truthful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really kind of hurt credibility, and it's just one of those things that just sort of catches on, and then people say it and repeat it, and they don't even really know what they mean or the damage that they're doing.
Right.
And it just sort of keeps perpetuating. People shout that at me all the time.
Fake news?
Mm-hmm.
They just will yell fake news.
Yeah, or someone will go, I don't want to talk to you, you're fake news. And it's made certain stories harder to get.
Yeah.
People like to write it on social media, fake news. It's done a lot of damage. It really, really has.
Yeah.
But I think there's a reason that certain administrations try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think journalists now more than ever are so important. I think they're so important. We, no matter whether you like the media or not, you need a free press.
Mm-hmm.
Locally, on the national stage and on the global stage, especially you need it. I think, and local news, in my opinion, proved itself to be so important with the Thomas fire and the mudslide, because the national news media is going to come and cover it for just a few days. Mm-hmm. And then when it's done, it's done. They're going to leave, but we're still going to be here.
Right.
So we're going to cover it, you know, in the all the time that you need to know that important information. And then we're going to cover the recovery after. And we've been covering, I've done so many stories on the mudslide and the recovery. And I think that's why local news is still so vital. And I think it's always going to be. It just does a disservice, even if you're joking, to say fake news. And I just hope that people are more careful when they just spout off fake news.
So there's a really interesting book, and I'm wondering if you've ever read it. It's one I read a couple months back, but I think it came out in like 2008, but it's called Confessions of a Media Manipulator by Ryan Holiday.
Mm-mm.
Have you ever heard of that book?
Mm-mm.
And I'll summarize the entire book for everyone that hasn't read it or listened to it, but it's basically just bringing to light how, because of the internet, it is very difficult to fact check in many regards, because a story can be pulled from another journalist's story that maybe didn't check the facts 100% and then just put a piece of that. And, you know, he doesn't come out and say all news is fake news, but he definitely brings to light how it is difficult to check facts nowadays, like even for top news agencies. Have you had any difficulty over the years, especially with more of just social media era and being able to check facts? And
yeah, it's hard, especially when you're even having a conversation with somebody who has different values or different ideas or different beliefs, or someone who maybe supports Trump or someone who doesn't, and you're trying to have a conversation and they have this group of facts and you have this group of facts and they don't match.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very hard. And so before I argue with anybody or have a discussion with anybody, I always try to study up and try to figure out what really is the truth. I think it's very, very, it's very difficult. It's very challenging. And there's so much information out there. And I think we have to be better discerners at knowing, you know, what is real and what is not. And I think that's our greatest challenge moving forward as, you know, as humanity.
Yeah.
Just, so.
Yeah, 100%. Are there any, I don't know, are there any sites or places where you ever research that debunk certain myths or rumors? I know, isn't there like a site called Snopes or Snipe? At one point there was, I don't know if it's still out there.
You know, I don't. I try to. I don't have a specific site. I know there's PolitiFact or Polita. Gosh, what's the name of it? It's a fact-checking site.
Okay.
PolitiFact, I think it's called. And they often, that's very good. But I just try to, go to different places that I trust to read different things. Like, I would never go to Breitbart News and say, and quote anything that they say. I would never go there. That's just one that that comes to mind that I don't want to even read it because I don't want to pollute my mind with things that may or might, you know, in my opinion are not true. So it's not just going to one place. I think you have to go to different places and then sort of bring everything together that you think is true and valid.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to shift gears a little bit because I find it very interesting. And I mean, I even think for those that are not familiar with the Thomas Fire, it was last year here in the Santa Barbara, California area. It was at the time the largest California fire ever. That's now since been surpassed, I believe, right?
It was surpassed by the Camp Fire and the Woolsey Fire. The Woolsey Fire.
Okay.
So the Camp Fire, I believe, is now the deadliest.
Okay.
And the Woolsey Fire, I think it's still, the Thomas Fire is still among the largest, for sure.
It was huge.
But it was quickly.
It lasted like a month at least, or longer?
Yes.
It was just insane.
It started.
Everyone was evacuated.
It started December 4th or 5th, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure. And then it went for several weeks. And then we had about a week break. And then the mudslides happened on January 9th.
Yeah, I mean, it was one thing after another and insane. And I think about you being on call literally, like almost nonstop, doing your thing, seeing some pretty sad stuff. And I would imagine as a journalist, you see some pretty heartbreaking things. How do you, as Elise Martinez, as just human, like chill out and separate that from being able to, I guess, recuperate and relax? Like,
well, I think a lot of us, a lot of the reporters, had a little bit of, I don't want to say PTSD, that's not the right word, but something similar to that after the fires and the mudslides. It was just kind of like we were all sort of grappling with what we had seen and telling people's stories, but it does not compare. The people who really need to be admired are the first responders and those people rescuing people. I mean, they see, in my opinion, much more and deal with much more trauma than we do. So
sure.
It's the first responders and those people, I think, are, you know, so what I dealt with was minor compared to what they had to deal with. But it's still, it's more of stress and constantly being on the go and figuring out what's going on and telling people and being nonstop. And the mudslide, so for the Thomas Fire, it was just physically and mentally sort of grueling. The mudslide, because so many people had died, was so emotional and sad and heartbreaking. And some of the firefighters I knew had seen, you know, helped the people, you know, rescued the people, or, you know, they saw bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just, that was gut wrenching. And when I still interview people now about that time, I get emotional. Sometimes I cry, and it's just, that was, I don't know how you just keep going. You just keep going. You move on. The next story's happening. You just have to keep going.
What are some practices though that you have just for self-care and your own sanity and the ability to relax?
About 2 years ago, I went through like a deep depression, and I don't know, it came out of nowhere. I don't even know what it was like. All of a sudden I felt like I was just drowning. And, so I started listening to podcasts, I started reading, and I started meditating.
Mm.
And I would meditate almost every day, and just, I had to walk through it. I had to walk through it and suffer. I suffered for like, gosh, it was like 6 months of just, and not really knowing what it was. And then it suddenly just one day it just kind of lifted and it was gone. So it's meditation, trying to work out, but I really honestly don't do that anymore because
I've seen you in the gym. I watch your Insta stories.
That's like once a month. So bad. I think that's what I need. Like my goal is to start more self-care as far as working out and running again. But I kind of keep the meditation constant and just, thought control, mind control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really am very cognizant about what I think about, how I think about it, how I process things. I really try to keep the negative talk down. Because otherwise I think if you don't, it just, you can just spiral so easily.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing that we should teach kids in school is how to be mentally healthy.
Yeah.
I don't think we teach them that. There's so many tools that are available to help your mind process things, and I don't think enough people know about it.
Yeah, I think we definitely are lacking at teaching kids how to quiet their minds. We're lacking how to, I guess, teach them mindfulness in a way. I know there's
exactly.
some cool programs and things that are evolving, but I think we're definitely still a little short.
Oh, we're so short. I think that's
and how to talk about their feelings too.
Well, that's one of the most important things to being a human. I mean, who really cares if you can do math problems? You know, if you can't be a functioning happy person. I mean, of course, all that education is important, but I feel like this component is so much more important, and I try to teach my son as much as I can about mindfulness and negative self-talk and little lessons along the way that I've learned that have helped me immensely. But there's only so much I can do, but that's my goal. That's my goal with raising my son, is to make sure that he has those tools quieting his mind. It was so funny because we were coming back from Catalina, and my son always makes fun of me because one time he walked in and I think I was like this, like, and he makes fun of me. He's like, oh, mommy meditates. But then we were coming over from Catalina this past weekend, and the boat was rocky.
Yeah,
and it was, everybody was throwing up and people were getting sick, and I told myself, you got it. Find the horizon and calm your mind, because you cannot get sick because your son isn't. So my son was not feeling well.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden he goes like this.
Start some breathing exercises.
Yeah, and I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm calming my mind. It was so cute.
That's
so
awesome.
I know that what I'm telling him is somehow, and he's only seven.
Yeah.
I know that what I'm telling him is somehow getting into his brain.
Yeah.
So he said, I just needed to calm my mind. I was feeling sick.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was cool.
That's very cool.
It was really cool.
That's very cool. What would you say, I'm going to get a little deep here for a second, and take a second if you need to think about this, but what
okay.
would you say is your greatest struggle in life, period? A time, a specific event, and then what did you learn from that? What's the biggest takeaway you learned from that?
The greatest struggle in my life. I think it's been an ongoing thing from when I first could remember until now, is sort of anxiety and overthinking. I think I've caused myself so much trauma just from my mind and creating situations and creating external realities that weren't even there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've harmed myself in so many ways, but just by the way I thought for so many years.
Mm.
And just since that thing happened 2 years ago was the first real shift in thinking. And so, yeah, I think that's been my greatest struggle my whole life, is creating my own hell in my mind.
Mm.
And it's, to me, I look back, I'm like, gosh, it was so much stress and anxiety for what? For nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's been my greatest thing. Just and then all the anxiety that that's caused.
And it's interesting because I get anxious too at times and definitely guilty of overthinking. And
I hate it.
We actually notice like a physical exhaustion after a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
From thinking too much. It's crazy. It's very connected.
And
so how other than meditation, and I know we talked about CBD has helped kind of quiet and relax the body a little bit.
Yeah,
what are some other things
CBD
that
has helped? Eckhart Tolle, I don't know if that's how you say his name, but just people like that, sort of those spiritual people. I've just read books like that. Michael Singer, The Untethered Mind. I'm not sure if that's the right book, but just books like that. Just sort of releasing your thoughts and not taking things personally, not taking things people do personally.
Have you read The Four Agreements?
Yes, stuff like that.
Because that sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yes, that's... So stuff... Just reading sort of those... Because you can't really go to school for this stuff. So it's more of educate. If I hear of a book that, you know, helps with spirituality or mindfulness, I'll read it. And it's just all that... All those things... It's sort of a combination of all those teachings that has really helped me. I feel like I can never go back to that person who just had the overthinking, stressful, negative mind. And you don't even and I don't think people would really characterize me as a negative person, but I think in a sense that I was. And I you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me it's just reading and learning and talking to other people and listening to like Rich Roll.
Yeah.
He has Guru Singh.
Yeah.
And his wife is Julie Pyatt.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listen to them. And that's helped immensely.
Yeah.
But it's just a constant learning, and I'm excited that if I keep on this path, you know, the change that I'll have, you know, 5 years from now, how I'll relax, how I'll feel. So it's a journey, but I'm glad that I am where I am now. I don't want to go back to.
I think that's a huge takeaway for everybody, is knowing that no matter how you grew up or whatever circumstance in your mm-hmm. environment, you know, we have what we call brainwashing. Well, I always think we have this option called brain cleansing,
mm-hmm.
which I think, like you said, one of the best ways is just to read.
Yeah.
Do you like audio, or do you do Kindle, or like the actual book? What's your preference?
I like actual books. I don't own a Kindle. And then I like podcasts.
Yeah.
Especially
if... The Brock Cannon podcast, especially.
The Brock Cannon podcast. I'm fascinated by podcasts. I've always wanted to do one.
Yeah.
And
you'd be a natural
great.
For it.
You've I think they're great. I would
so
love
many
to
interviews.
Do it. I would love to do it.
I'll be your first guest.
Okay, sounds
done.
Good.
Done.
Done. Yeah, so podcasts are great. I like to read. I just don't have time to read books as much as I would like to, because I'm a single mom.
For sure.
I work a gnarly job, and I just do it when I can. I just fit it all in when I can. And even when I'm driving down the street, I just sort of practice. My latest thing is, my mantra is now, don't worry about a thing. I just, if I start having all these worries come up, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen? I just tell myself, don't worry about it. Don't worry about a thing. And that sort of helps. I think it's those little tiny adjustments that you can make right now. Just pick something to tell yourself what you're... Because I'm a worrier. I just am. I've always has been.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. But I like it all. Whatever, however I can get it, whenever I can get it, is when I do it.
Yeah. I love it. I want to go back to books for a second. What would you say is your one or two all-time favorites that you've read that just really stick out? Maybe you've even reread them.
Well, it's not even a spiritual book, but The Power of One.
Hmm.
that was a book that just sort of changed me in a way that it was just the central character was just became this just powerful figure.
Is it a fiction book?
I think so.
Okay. I have not read it.
And so that was one. I'm trying to think of what else. Any Eckhart Tolle, all of his books really changed. The Four Agreements. I'm trying to think what else. I like mostly nonfiction, but basically those pretty standard.
What setting or place do you feel most at peace if you're trying to quiet the mind? And just, is that nature? Is that just curled up in your house with a good book? Like, what? Where is that happy place for you?
It's a lot of places. It can even be at work. It can even be when I'm doing a story that I love. I feel such a sense of peace and happiness. It's so weird. And I can be in chaos and still just be happy. It's wherever. It can be at home. It can be in nature. It can be wherever I want it to be. And that's another one of my focuses right now is finding peace in chaos.
So even when
shit is horrible, because it's like, it's great. We can all be happy when everything's going well. Like,
right.
That's easy.
Right.
My challenge for myself has been when I'm sick, like right now, when I'm sick or when I don't have any money in the bank or when, you know, I'm fighting with family or whatever, that's when I need to find the peace. That's when, and that's the challenge. And that's, so far I haven't really been able to do that as much as I want to yet. But to me, that's the challenge, is finding the peace in the chaos. Because it's easy. It's easy to be happy when everything's going great.
100%.
But to me, that would be the greatest life lesson, is to be able to be happy, even if the worst thing is happening to you. And my other thing is, I want to be so solid and so stable that no matter what is thrown at me, that it doesn't affect my well-being, that I can absorb it and then let it go and still be whole. Because we're all so afraid of, what if this happens? What if this gets taken away from me? What if, you know? And I don't want to live that way. It's just not.
Yeah.
I just don't want to live that way.
One of my good friends, I don't know if he coined this phrase, but it's really stuck with me over the years, as I tend to worry, like probably every human. But he always said, Brock, don't create disaster movies in your head.
Right.
And, you know, you think about that, like, and I don't mean any disrespect to the news. I appreciate the news, but there are people, I have extended family members who literally wake up, first thing they're watching is CNN, which, you know, there's the old acronym, constant negative news, that some people have coined.
Yeah.
But they're watching these atrocities and, in a way, filling their mind with disasters. And then they go to bed right before they're going to go into their REM state and all that. And they're thinking of disasters a lot of times. So I think a lot of it is what we intake into the brain, you know, and perspective. I mean, we can always see things as good and there's an opportunity in it, or it's just pure negative. So
yeah, well, everything's not always good. It's not always good. I mean, it's such a balance of good and bad. And in the 24-hour news cycle, it's so hard to watch some of the things that are happening. And I find myself, if I'm on Twitter, I go down this deep hole of, you know, horrible things going on. And I have to get off for a little bit.
Yeah.
And sort of reframe my mind that this is the world and atrocities happen, but, you know, it's ever evolving. And there are good people. And that's, you know, you can't let yourself go down that hole.
Yeah,
but you also need, you can't live in a bubble either.
Yeah, you can't be.
It's not all, you know,
yeah,
happy hippie meditation, nature.
Right.
You know, it's not. That's not living in reality.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And I agree. And I think when I see things that are difficult to watch or mm-hmm. hear, to me, the lesson is just perspective. It's like, okay, for mm-hmm. a minute, we all can look at our own lives and say, someone has it worse than me.
Yeah.
Like, always, someone always has it worse than you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That grounds me. Perspective and gratitude in that sense.
Yeah, gratitude is everything, you know? I mean, my mom always said, someone always has it better than you, and someone always has it worse than you.
Yeah.
And you can go in any strata of humanity, and that's the same for every person.
Yeah.
Even so, I think it's perspective and gratitude. And I think we can't just be peaceful observers anymore.
Yeah.
I think we have to take action.
Yes.
In any way we can. To do a little thing every day for someone.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of money and I can't give to charity, but I can help people.
Yeah.
Or I can tell somebody's story and I can do, it's just the little things. And if we multiply those, I think, the world will be better.
Yeah. Kindness.
Kindness.
Just smiling at someone can be...
Kindness. I try to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm a
dick sometimes. I'll be on the trail, but it's just because I'm zoned out and I'll have my music in. And I know there's like 10 people that have said, oh, good morning. And I'm just like...
Yeah.
So I'm working on that. Like, at least smile. Like, you know, give a head nod or something.
Yeah, totally. I think so. Yeah.
That's awesome. So... Two last questions, okay. And I'm going to steal this one from Tim Ferriss because it's one of my favorites. And
why does that name sound familiar?
He's got an amazing podcast as well.
Okay.
4-Hour Work Week, 4-Hour Body, 4-Hour Chef.
Right. Got it.
I think his new one's called Tribe of Mentors, so he's written some great books. But if you had to put one phrase or one sentence on a billboard, what would you put up there?
Oh, my gosh. One
phrase. A message to the world.
Well, it would just be don't worry. That's because that's my thing right now. Just don't worry. You just have to start there. Because I think don't worry encapsulates so much. It encapsulates negative talk and negative thinking and just don't worry. Because you'd spend all that energy on that and then you don't take action and you don't do things and because you're living in fear. And I think that is the biggest hindrance, is just living in fear all the time. If I listened to my mind, I wouldn't be here today. If I listened to like everything that people told me or that I told myself, I wouldn't be here. So I think it's just quiet your mind, don't worry, take action. And everything will follow. I mean, whether it's good, it's like shifts in perspective. Something may seem to be good, but then it turns out to be bad. And then that may seem to be bad, but then that turns out to be good. So it's just this shift in, you know, riding the wave and perspective, you know? It's just, and everything's happening, and don't place so much meaning on everything, you know? But don't worry. That's what I would write.
I love it. I think that's a beautiful place to stop.
Okay.
Elise, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I hope I made sense. I'm a little sick, and so I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. My son's coughing, so I hope I made sense.
I really appreciate you doing it when you're feeling under the weather.
Okay.
So thank you so
much.
Thank you. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.
All right, guys, Brock here again. One last thing. I just wanted to thank all of you for listening to this episode. Really appreciate all the listener love and support. Make sure you guys subscribe to this. You can listen to it on any of your favorite platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, whatever you so prefer. And if you've enjoyed this, please just continue to share it with your friends and loved ones for hopefully what is valuable knowledge on the go as you go about your busy day. So thanks again so much for your support, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.